It had all started, as so many things tended to do, at a party on Bogdan's yacht. The regular crowd were all there, oligarchs and their trophy wives, oil sheikhs, an Indian steel magnate or two, a few movie faces, and a selection of the finest politicians money could buy. And Ms. Neige LaBlanche, of course, pretty in canary yellow, and bored out of her exquisitely contoured skull. And a little roly-poly bald man in a Hawaiian shirt, open sandals and socks, who said his name was George. He was quite obviously nobody, compared to the sleek and the mighty all around him. But people were talking to him and laughing at his jokes, and Ms. LaBlanche found the incongruity intriguing. So she asked the maitre d', an old friend and ally. Him, he shrugged. English. Nobody's perfect. Why do they all like him so much? He's rich. English rich? The maitre d' shook his head. Genuinely rich, he said. Look, if money was weight, he could sit at one end of the boat and everybody else could be at the other, and his end would sink like a stone. Rich as in? The maitre d' frowned. Property, he said. Sort of. So when the opportunity presented itself, she went and sat next to George the Englishman, and smiled at him, and he smiled back, and offered her a plate of horrid sticky cakes. No thanks, she said sweetly. I only have to look at a cake, and suddenly nothing fits anymore. That's a pity, he said, because these cakes are for looking at, not for eating. She assumed that was supposed to be a joke, and did the silvery laugh. But George said, No, seriously. You don't eat them, you look at them. Or, more precisely, through them. He grinned and held out his hand. I'm George, he said, and this is what I do for a living. You're a baker? No, but these are what you might call my stock in trade. Going nowhere. That's a nice shirt, she said. Where did you get it? Here. George picked up a doughnut, his finger and thumb meeting through the hole in the middle. It's safer if you hold it like that, he said. Just a second. I'll wrap it for you. He took a paper napkin, wrapped the doughnut and put it on her knee. You think I'm stark raving bonkers, don't you? Yes, she said, but in the nicest possible way. He nodded. The last person I gave one of these doughnuts to paid me 50,000 quid for it, he said. But I like you. You've got nice eyes, so this one's on me. Oh, and you'll need one of these. From his top pocket he took a folded piece of paper. Tells you how it works, he explained. Excuse me, I'm going for a pee. Sometime later, when she was alone in the cabin, she opened her bag, and there inside it was the napkin-wrapped doughnut, which she thought she'd thrown over the side of the boat, but clearly she hadn't. Also the folded bit of paper the mad rich man had given her. She unfolded it and started to read. Half an hour later, some fool came and disturbed her, and she had to go and be nice to people, and it was 3 in the morning before she had a chance to get some peace and quiet and read it through yet again. It was, of course, entirely crazy and impossible, in exactly the same way as flying in the air was before the Wright brothers came along. So she found George, who was sitting on deck, drying his socks in the sun. "You read it, then?" "I don't believe it." "Suit yourself." She sat down next to him, picked up one sock and held it over the side. "Explain it to me," she said, "or the sock gets it." "Let's not be hasty," George said. "Actually, it's really quite simple." And then he told her about the late Professor Peter Van Goyen of Leiden, who'd spent his life exploring the endlessly fascinating and lethally frustrating field of multiverse theory. Van Goyen started from the premise that there are an infinite number of parallel universes and alternative realities, of which our neck of the spatio-temporal woods is only one, and a pretty drab one at that. But what if someone invented an interface, a device that let you cross over to the alternative version of your choice, at will, just by wanting to go there and doing some simple, painless, inexpensive act? If only, thought Professor Van Goyen, and then, why not? And then he disappeared without trace, shortly before his favourite student, Theo Bernstein, accidentally blew up the very, very large Hadron Collider and found himself out of a job. And Bernstein took over where Van Goyen had left off. And it's a long story, and let other pens dwell, etc. "But how would it be," George said, "if there really was such an interface, and you could use it to travel to parallel universes where things are very different? Easy as falling off the proverbial log." "Well," Ms. LaBlanche said, after a long pause for thought, "I imagine you could make a great deal of money." George beamed at her. "Done that," he said. "Care to speculate how? Something to do with property?" "Sort of," George said. "Well, you know how there's a killing to be made, buying up derelict old farmhouses in the back end of France and Spain and God knows where else, and flogging them to jaded urban Brits with half-baked dreams of authentic colour supplement Arcadian living? Fine. Only that market's a bit passé, and prices are going up. What's needed is somewhere completely unspoiled and undiscovered and derelict and dirt poor where, allowing for exchange rate fluctuations, the entire GDP wouldn't buy you a Big Mac and fries in London, and a man with vision and the courage to aspire could make out like a bandit." "And is there such a place?" asked Ms. LaBlanche. "Sure there is," George said, and told her about the hidden realms. She listened carefully, and then asked, "And how did you say you go about getting there?"
"I didn't."
"But it's really very easy. You just need a donut."
"Donut?"
He nodded. "The sort with a hole in the middle. Or a bagel. Or even a Cheerio. Any sort of circular, centrally perforated foodstuff. That's the genius of it. The equations are set up to focus the exochronomatic field through the hole, thereby punching a hole through the transmorphic barrier while simultaneously creating a massive uncertainty effect. And bingo, you're there. Piece, no pun intended, of, does it have to be a special donut? Any donut will do. I tell the punters, it's got to be one of mine, but that's just bull. Theo Bernstein proved that, bless him, shortly before he disappeared. What they're actually paying for is attunement to the vast and eye-watering, expensive Van Goyen Matrix Generator I've had built in a disused salt mine in Silesia. But a magic donut sounds better. It's called U-Space, by the way. Catchy, don't you think? No, but it really works? George pointed at his shoes beside him on the deck of the yacht. Dinnington's of St. James's, he said. Handmade. Cost me $5,000. It works. She knew a pair of Dinnington shoes when she saw one. And people actually buy, George shrugged. I know, he said. Wouldn't suit me. Uproot yourself and swan off lock, stock and barrel to some faraway place of which you know little. You can't speak the language, and the locals are a load of bloody savages who'd murder you for your earwax. But once you've made up your mind to it, Provence or the Hidden Realms, what difference does it make? Except your money goes ever so much further in the realms, and the locals aren't so snotty either. Talking of the locals, said Miss LeBlanche, what are they like? So George told her about the proud, supercilious elves, the industrious and warlike dwarves, the feather-duster-footed halflings, the primitive but noble humans, the trolls, the wraiths, the dark elves, and, of course, the goblins. Bloody lunatics, the lot of them, he concluded. But I don't give a stuff. I don't have to live there. These dwarves, said Miss LeBlanche, are they really rich? George laughed. There's more to life than just money, pet. Wash your mouth out with soap and water. Well, are they? George looked round at his fellow guests on the deck of the yacht and lowered his voice. Tell you what, he said. They could buy and sell this lot and still have change out of their beer money. And a nicer class of person, too. Marginally. She looked where he just looked and gave her opinion that that wouldn't be difficult. Present company accepted, she added politely. George was amused. Thinking of trying your luck, then? When I left school, Miss LeBlanche said, the careers advisor told me the modern world is crying out for intelligent, capable, dynamic women with solid core values and the will to succeed. I can see now that she was right. She just neglected to specify which world, that's all. Silly me, I thought she must have been talking about this one. But obviously not. Now I know. Well, she'd gone away, she thought about it, and now here she was. Regrets? A few. But then again, too few to mention. Except, had she known, she'd definitely have brought some books to read. The funny little lawyer's offering was quite hard going, and she'd read on Chesil Beach, so she was no quitter. But it was that or the recipe book. And she saw enough of that when she was working. She was gently sautéing some liver when the door flew open. Dwarvish hinges are half an inch thick and made of heat-treated carbon steel. There's a reason for that. And King Drain lumbered in, knocking over a pan of chopped leeks and spilling flour all over the kitchen table. You're human, he said. She knew that tone of voice. Usually it said, you're a woman, and ended up lumbering her with the task of choosing somebody's wife's birthday present. I know. Why? And you're not from round here. Proceed with caution. True. Why? What do you make of this? He slammed something down on the table in front of her. She looked at it. Rephrase the question. Ask me what I make with this.
All right. What?
Soup, she replied.
Or sauces.
Sometimes, if I'm feeling lazy, fruit salad.
Where do you get it?
You recognize it?
Sure.
We have them where I come from.
How do you make soup with a small rotary shear?
She smiled at him.
We open a tin. That's what it's for. It's a tin opener.
Most of King Drain's face was beard, but he had very bright, pale brown eyes, almost golden.
It's not made of tin. And what do you open with it?
Tin can. We preserve food by sealing it in little metal tubes. This is how you cut the tops off to get at what's inside.
It's remarkable, Drain said. I've been a metalsmith all my life, and my father before me, and his father before him. My great-grandfather, Grain son of Groin son of Grizzly, built the bronze gates of Thingogram, which weigh 500 tons each, but a child can push them open. But I've never seen work as fine as this.
She shrugged.
It's no big deal. Everybody's got one, back home.
Everybody? Even poor people?
Mostly.
Drain thrust the tin opener under her nose.
But look at it. Look at how precisely the gear teeth are cut. I measured them with calipers. There isn't a thousandth of an inch difference between them.
Are you trying to tell me you humans have craftsmen who can do work like this?
No idea. But it's all made by machines.
For a moment, she thought he must be having a stroke or a coronary.
A machine that can file?
I don't know. That's all rather specialised. All I know is we have factories full of machines in a place called China, and they make all kinds of stuff. Everyday things. Cheap.
She peered at him through the beard.
He really didn't look well at all.
Where did you say you got this from?
The Wizard's Tower, Snorfang. It was lying around in the dirt. I thought it must be a product of dark wizardry.
She laughed.
Nothing to worry about on that score. It's just a cheap old tin opener.
That's what I'm so worried about, Drain said feebly. Wizards we can cope with. Machines that can file metal to exact tolerances cheaply will be the ruin of us all.
Ah. She really ought to have thought of that before she blundered along and put her foot right in it.
A very long way away, she said soothingly. Ever so far.
Really?
So how did it get here?
Through a donut, presumably, she didn't say.
Besides, she went on, it's no threat to you, is it? Nobody can cut you out of the can opener business because there isn't one. Because there aren't any cans. So you've got nothing to worry about at all.
She was drivelling and she knew it. So, she suspected, did King Drain, who didn't look the least bit reassured. Nor should he be, of course. He might look like a clown with his stumpy bow legs and his ludicrous Africana church elder beard with a tiny point of nose sticking out of it like a carrot out of a snowman. But one thing her years in the profession had taught her was not to judge people by how they looked. She'd known a lot of men who looked even more grotesque than King Drain, and who made ever such a lot of money in places where money was hard to come by. And a lot of beautiful women, including the one who lived in her mirror, who weren't nearly as angelic as they looked. And Drain wasn't to know, because she'd seen fit to withhold the key information from him, just how unlikely it was that the Chinese were poised to flood his domestic market with cheap manufactured goods. Point. Why hadn't she told him? Because he wouldn't believe her? Because the technology involved was so advanced it sounded like magic? Magic worked around here, to a limited extent, and not particularly usefully, it was true. But it was genuine magic, not just science in fancy dress. How or why it worked, she didn't know and preferred not to speculate. Local variations in the laws of physics was her guess, and as an experienced traveller, she knew that so long as you observe the local laws and don't argue the toss, you're generally all right. So, if E chose to equal MC cubed rather than MC squared in these parts, it was no skin off her nose, provided she knew what to expect and looked where she was putting her feet. So, if not for fear of being thought crazy, why hadn't she said anything about donuts and U-space and how she'd got there and so forth? Partly, she suspected, because nobody had actually asked. Well, you don't, do you? When was the last time you met a stranger who dresses a bit funny and has an accent you can't quite place and immediately demanded to know if they come from an alternative reality? You just assume they're a bit foreign and think no more of it. And partly, face it, she told herself, because the secret of the interface is your edge, your get-out-of-trouble-free card, your ace in the hole should things not go well, and there'd be no point giving that away without a very good reason, in which sector King Drain's peace of mind doesn't fall, unfortunately. Tough, but there we go. If he wasn't worried about that, it'd be something else. And also, a thought burst into flower in her mind, beautiful and terrible. But why not? She'd come here, after all, to make money, preferably without having to stare at too many ceilings. And this idea was an absolute peach. Maybe, she said, you're looking at it the wrong way. Oh? Drain turned the tin opener over and squinted at it from underneath. Sorry, you'll have to explain. What am I supposed to be looking for? This whole issue, she said, taking it gently away from him and putting it down on the kitchen table. The cheap goods thing. I mean, why should it be a problem? Are you kidding? The point of his nose had gone bright red. If these China people are going to start bringing their goods here to sell, ah, she smiled, you're afraid because they can make things cheaper and better than your workers can, so they'll all be out of a job. Yes. What's so bad about that? There was an interval, about 2 seconds, when his mouth opened and closed, but no words came out. Then he roared, "Are you back home?" she said calmly. "We call it outsourcing. Why pay 5 silver pennies to have something made here by expensive, truculent workers who don't know when they're well off, when you can get the same thing run up by smiling, obedient, grateful primitives for a penny 3 farthings? Then, suppose you normally sell one for 9p? You can cut the price to 8p. Which means you sell more and still make a much bigger profit. Now that's smart, she smiled. That's the sort of thinking that's made my homeland the sort of place it is today. He had that sort of bewildered look on his face, the sort that can't make its mind up whether the rosy glow in the sky is a bright new dawn or the end of the world. But that's crazy, he said. I'm king of the dwarves. I'm responsible for them. I can't just throw the whole lot of them out of work simply to make money.
Of course not, she said soothingly. That would be very naughty.
So you find them other things to do instead.
Drain blinked.
Such as?
Oh, there's loads of things. Information technology, financial services, entertainment, hospitality and tourism. All very worthwhile and fulfilling. And so much better than toiling away in a dirty old factory all day, or being stuck down a mine. We made the changeover years ago, and you wouldn't believe how happy and content everyone's been ever since. You'll be Drain the Great before you know it. Statues of you all over the place.
She watched him think. It was like observing speeded-up tectonic shift. Huge masses of preconceived ideas colliding and forming mountains or sinking forever beneath the oceans.
And these China people would sell us the stuff.
No problem.
How would they get it here?
Oh, I can see to all that, she said, as if undertaking to pick up a few groceries on her way to the office. You wouldn't have to be involved at all. A flicker of suspicion, which died away.
Really?
Sure. For a small percentage, naturally. But yes, I can make all the necessary arrangements.
I'll have to think about it.
Yes, she thought, but not too hard. Of course. Take your time. I don't suppose there's any real risk of anybody else getting the same idea and beating you to it. She paused and smiled. The elves, say, or even the goblins. You think about it as long as you like.